Hello and welcome to Hot Girls Code, a podcast all about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech. I'm your host, Lola.
And I am your host, Aughty. So today we'll be chatting about three places you might not expect to find bias in tech. Something people may or may not know is that unconscious bias or just outright bias can make its way into a lot of places where you might not assume that it would be.
So today we're going to delve into three of these unexpected places. Now, a couple of these may be places that you already know that bias is kind of likely to occur, but it's the kind of bias that probably doesn't come to front of mind when you're thinking about bias in tech.
Now, I feel like before we can dive into a topic like this, we need to arm ourselves with lots of good energy, good vibes, and share some gratitude. So, Lola, what are you grateful for this week?
This week, I am feeling, as always, eternally grateful for the sunshine and swims at the beach. Now, I have just come back from leave after having a lovely holiday break, and I gotta tell you, the highlight was just going to the beach, going for a swim, being in the water. I've told quite a lot of people this, but I do think in a previous life I was some kind of aquatic mammal or like a fish or something, because I just feel so happy in the water. And my partner actually told me the other day, he's like, because I said that to him, I said, I think I must have been a dolphin in my last life. And he said, I think you were probably like a manatee or something.
That's so savage.
Yeah, it was pretty rude. And then I kind of forgot what a manatee looks like, and like, I think I thought that a manatee was a walrus, so I was like doubly offended. But then he explained the intricate differences between a manatee and a walrus, and I was like, okay, fine.
I mean, they do look pretty similar, but hey, they're cute.
They're kind of cute. Sea lions are cute. Seals are cute. We'll take it.
I do feel like a lot of people that like grow up in New Zealand, we just love beaches. And like, I remember one time I had a family friend of ours who'd come over from the States, and they were like, oh, I'm going to the beach for the first time. And I was like, oh, like for the first time here. And they're like, no, in my life. And I was like, excuse me? And this person had gone like 20 something years and had never gone to the beach. And I was horrified. I was like, I couldn't imagine that life.
That's just like one of the benefits of living on like an island nation, I guess. Because yeah, you look at some places like in the US, which are super inland, and yeah, it'd be hours and hours to any beaches. So I'm feeling very grateful for that today. And Aughty, what are you feeling grateful for this week?
Well, actually, on a similar note, I am also feeling grateful for swims, but instead of beach swims, I thought I'd do a little something different, and I'm actually grateful for freshwater swims, and specifically waterfall swims. So during the like Christmas New Year's break, I got to get in some good waterfall swims, and I just love them. And one of my favorite things is like, I used to be so scared of swimming like to like the bottom of a waterfall, and I'd be like, what if like I die somehow? I was always so terrified, and I like in the past couple years have like been really brave. Turns out they're not that hard. You're not gonna die. As long as you're not going from the top, you're fine.
But you know what TLC said, don't go chasing waterfalls, Aughty.
No, I always chase waterfalls. I love them. Like if there is a hike and someone's like, at the end of the hike is a waterfall, I will do the hike. Like, that is my deciding factor. Because the best thing is when you do like a long hike, you get to the waterfall and you're like hot and sweaty, and then you just jump into the fresh water. And it's just nice because like, I do love a beach swim, but it is nice to like come out of the water and not have like the salt on you, and just to have like the cool refresh. And it's always freezing, which is really nice in weather like this.
Yeah, that's the thing with beach swims, is you always end up finding sand like in your hair or like just somewhere on your body for like days afterwards. And it's like, okay, how did this happen? But yeah, freshwater swims, you don't have that problem.
Exactly. But yeah, definitely feeling very grateful that we live in a country that has great beaches and great waterfalls.
So now that we're feeling nice and grateful, especially for all the water in New Zealand, let's dive into today's episode.
So as we said, we're going to be talking about a few places you might not expect to find bias in tech. And this episode is especially important if you're someone who works in the tech industry, because if you aren't aware of how bias can accidentally enter things that you do and create, then it's hard to do something about them.
Absolutely. Like, you know, you can't fix a problem if you don't know that it exists. So today we are going to be diving into just three places that you might not expect to find bias. And these places are code reviews, team processes, and within the technology we build itself. But the first place that we wanted to talk through today, where you wouldn't expect to find bias in tech, is within code review comments.
For anyone that doesn't know what a code review is, it's basically just when another member of your team looks over your code and gives you feedback on things that you could change to make the code better.
And this takes up a lot of our time. So interestingly, there was this research paper called Process Aspects and Social Dynamics of Contemporary Code Review. And this paper found that code review processes take up to 10 to 15% of a developer's time. So clearly this is a substantial part of your day-to-day as a developer.
Yeah, that's definitely right. Code reviews are a super important part of like the software development process. Like I love using code reviews as a way to procrastinate sometimes. Like if a lot of people on my team just happen to have code reviews at the same time, I'll just be like, you know what? Let me just sit down and do like 3 or 4 in one go and then not do my own work. But you're still being productive and you're still helping.
Oh my God, yes. And then you get brownie points because you're that person that's like reviewing all the code and you're the one that's being super helpful. Well, actually, you're just procrastinating the thing that you're meant to be doing. Now, as we talk about a lot on this podcast, software development is a lot more collaborative than a lot of people think. Developers are often working together, and one of the ways that this collaboration happens is through these things called code reviews.
Code reviews help make sure that quality code is being deployed out into production. It's pretty much like a quality assurance thing. If someone else has reviewed your code, given you feedback to improve it, and eventually approves that that code is good to go, then this means that this code is likely to have less bugs or break things in production. Not guaranteed, though.
Definitely not guaranteed. Now, you might be wondering at this point, okay, so where does the bias come in? Well, often when reviewing code, you leave comments for whoever wrote the code about maybe improvements they could make, or even asking questions like, why did you do this way?
But because we are all humans, sometimes we express both positive and negative emotions in these code review comments. And that means that sometimes these comments are more destructive rather than constructive.
I actually did my honors project in my final year of engineering all about code review comments and what impact these destructive comments can have, as well as who's more likely to receive these kind of comments. It was really interesting because we were looking at it at a basis of gender as well, which is kind of where the bias is going to come in, which we're going to get to. But I looked at a whole bunch of research for my literature review, and there was some really interesting stuff that we want to share.
So especially for this episode, we went back through this research that Lola had compiled to dig out some interesting facts about bias in code reviews. So some people might think that building software is totally unemotional. It's very separate from humans and emotions. But guess what? That isn't the case. Lots of previous studies have shown that there is emotion in the software artifacts that developers create.
And if you're like, what the heck is a software artifact? Is this Indiana Jones? Like, what is an artifact? Not quite. So a software artifact is basically just something that contains information about the work that a team is doing. So it's things like issue reports that outline the piece of functionality which needs to be created, or commit messages, which are things that developers write when committing their code that basically just saves a snapshot of the code in time. And of course, another software artifact is code review comments.
And going back to those studies we said before, research has shown that there is emotion in software artifacts like those issue reports, like those commit messages, and of course, like those code review comments. And interestingly, research has indicated that the sentiment of these software artifacts can be influenced by things as simple as the day of the week, whether a team is remote-based, or even the language a project is written in.
That's so funny to me. It's like, you're mad that it's a Monday, so your commit message is just a little bit angrier than usual.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, maybe your project is in Java, and then all your issue reports will be like, very sad. Sad emotions only.
I would love to see like the correlation in these studies, but we won't dig into that today. Let's go back to code review comments. In terms of code review comments specifically, empirical research shows that up to 15% of code review comments contain either positive or negative sentiment. So some emotion is definitely getting in there.
Yeah, totally. We also found this interesting paper called Expressions of Sentiments During Code Reviews, Male versus Female. And this paper found that the presence of sentiment in code review comments is also influenced by gender, with women being significantly less likely to express either positive or negative sentiments.
So that research is kind of telling us that women tend to be more neutral in code review comments, whereas men tend to have a little bit more negativity and positivity in their comments.
I kind of love this finding because I feel like a common trope you hear in life is how, you know, women are just, we're just so emotional and we just can't be objective. It's just not possible. And yet we have research that shows that, at least in the context of code reviews, women are less likely to be the ones expressing emotions in code reviews.
It's super interesting. And in one of the papers I read about, they actually talked about something called practical politeness in open source software communities, which was basically women having to be neutral and having to be polite in order to just exist in those places. So it's kind of not surprising. This same paper also found that men tend to provide more negative reviews and less positive encouragement to females than to their male counterparts. And this is where potentially a bias against women is coming in.
That is a bit savage. And this isn't isolated to that one paper. There is a bunch of research out there that shows factors like race, gender, ethnicity, and age influence the code review experience for developers. So a 2022 study at Google showed that during code reviews, developers that identified as women faced a higher likelihood of pushback in their code reviews than men. Furthermore, Asian, Black, and Hispanic/Latinx developers faced higher odds than white developers of receiving pushback, and older developers faced higher odds than younger developers. And that's just one study.
It's so crazy because it's something that you really wouldn't expect there to be bias in. But there are plenty of other studies out there, and they find that pushback, code review rejections, and also the scrutiny with which reviews are performed are actually biased based on those factors of race, gender, ethnicity, and also age. Another example is a large-scale study on code review participation and acceptance rate in open source, which showed that code written by developers that appear to be Black is more likely to be rejected than code written by developers who appear to be white.
That is honestly so sad, and I just know that us developers, we can all do better. And so there we have the first place you might not expect to find bias in tech, and that is code reviews. Whether it's bias in the sense that you bias the sentiment of the comments you leave, or you have an unconscious bias towards the developer whose code you're reviewing that might impact how critical you are, it's important to be aware of any biases you might have when carrying out a code review and make sure you're treating the people whose code you're reviewing fairly.
Absolutely. And as we said at the start of this episode, the more aware we are of these things, then the better a job we can do to try and not let that bias creep in. Now, the second place you might not expect to find bias in tech is within team processes. So you know how most friend groups have like the unofficial organizer of the group? You know, the one who initiates the plans in the group chat and has the list of places to eat that cater to everyone's dietary requirements and reminds everyone that, you know, so-and-so's birthday is coming up. Well, at work, teams often have a similar kind of dynamic and they have someone similar to that. Someone who's doing the work that isn't necessarily the technical work that needs to be done, but more of the organizing work and the stuff that helps keep the team functioning. But if you're not mindful of who's actually doing that work, it can often land on the same person over and over again.
There's actually a term for this type of work known as glue work. So it's stuff like creating PowerPoints and giving presentations, organizing or communicating things, organizing team celebrations, like maybe getting a cake to celebrate something going live. It's doing workflow documentation, creating reports, onboarding new team members, and the list goes on. And the thing about glue work is it's important work, but it's work that is often the type of work that is less promotable in technical roles. So even though it's the stuff that needs to happen, it's not the type of thing that's going to actually get someone promoted at the end of the day, especially if it takes time away from their technical development.
And surprise, surprise, these tasks often fall on the shoulders of the woman in the team. In a study published by the American Economic Review, the researchers discovered that women volunteered more than men for tasks that are considered glue work. And you might be thinking, is this bias solely on the women who are volunteering for these tasks?
Unsurprisingly, no. In that same study, researchers also found that men actually waited longer to volunteer for glue work tasks when there were women on the team.
That's honestly so bad. Like, they're literally just sitting there waiting for a woman to put their hand up. But wait, there's more. Women were actually volunteered by managers or colleagues more often than the men on their team to do those glue work tasks.
So let's recap. There's the bias that makes women feel like they have to volunteer more. There's also the bias where men wait to volunteer if there are women present. And then there's the bias when no one volunteers and someone else is like, oh, you know who we should get to do that? A woman.
It's so funny when you put it all together like that. And I mean, this is something that we've both experienced in the workplace as well. And a lot of other women that we've spoken to in the tech industry have that same shared experience in situations like this. Back in episode 21, we had a bunch of listeners share their experiences about working in the tech industry through a survey, and we had plenty of anecdotes from women about being expected to take up the non-technical tasks when those expectations just aren't there for their male counterparts. Or these women feeling obligated to always pick up these non-technical things in order to be that good team player because no one else would. And hey, it wasn't like it's a challenging thing to do. It just takes up time. And importantly, it takes that time away from your technical development.
I've been on teams before where I, the only female dev, have been randomly selected to help organize a team lunch. Or one example that popped into mind when we were like preparing this episode was I remember at university, a guy in my team for a group project said I could make the PowerPoint while the boys in the team worked on the actual project because I could make it look pretty. And like, yes, I can do that. I can make it look pretty. But that's also in addition to being able to do the technical work. So why should I miss out on that hands-on experience?
I totally feel that. And it's so funny, like, just the fact that this guy is being like, oh, you do the PowerPoint. And you're like, no, I will do the coding. Thank you very much. You do the PowerPoint. I also think this whole bias is very internalized. Like, there's this expectation that you as a woman will do those kind of glue work tasks. So then you're kind of just like, whatever, it's fine, I'll do it. Like, I remember one time we were looking for a volunteer to organize a cake because we were celebrating something going live and no one else was volunteering. So after a minute, I was just like, okay, I'll just do it. It's fine. Like, let's just end the agony of no one putting their hand up. But it would be really interesting if more women did wait before they volunteer, the way that men seem to when they're a woman on their team.
Yeah, I've definitely had situations like that where I felt like I should be the one to volunteer. And I'm like, oh, well, it's not that hard for me to do, so I may as well. And I had an experience once where I was like, no, this one thing I'm not going to volunteer for. I volunteered for other things in the meantime, but we had to organize something in like a few months. And I was like, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to be the one. It never got organized. It didn't happen. Nobody volunteered to do it in the end because no one wanted to take that time to just be like, oh, let me find people's availability, find a thing to do, book it in. And I was like, it's three steps. It's not that hard. But I had made, it was the principle of the thing. And I was like, no, I organized several other things in the meantime, but not that.
And it's interesting because this glue work is so important to have like a healthy, well-functioning team. But then if no one's going to do it, then everything falls apart a little bit.
Yeah. So this is, if you couldn't tell, a problem. And it's something that we've both experienced. And if this is something you've noticed happening in your team or your organization, it's worth calling it out and saying something like, hey, I've noticed this responsibility defaults to the same people. Let's introduce a system where we make it more fair, like a rotating roster. My team a couple of years ago actually did that when it came to organizing team lunches. We had the same person that would always organize it. So we ended up coming up with a roster and each person every like month, there was a different person assigned and it was their responsibility to find a time, find a place, book it in for everyone. And it was nice because it just didn't always fall into the same person.
I love that. And it's so important to share the load on tasks like these because glue work tasks are important. And it's valid to suggest sharing the load between team members to make sure that the tasks get done without having to burden the same person every single time.
Another thing that you could do is if you're in a position of leadership or you feel comfortable in raising it with leadership, is to suggest adding a section to performance reviews that allow people to share this glue work that they're doing and have it be seen as valuable contributions to a team that should be considered when promotions come around.
Absolutely. This helps to elevate the value of the glue work that people are doing and actually give it the recognition that it deserves. And there you have the second place you might not expect to find bias in tech, and that is the very team processes that help us build the software we put out into the world.
The final place you might not expect to find bias in tech is a topic we've talked about before, but it's such an important one that it's worth revisiting, and that is coded bias.
We love talking about coded bias, but we do not love coded bias. If you're not sure what it is, coded bias is the idea that although we may think computers are totally objective and couldn't possibly have unconscious bias, this is unfortunately not the case. And that's because computer programs are written by humans and they're trained off human data sets. And these data sets have biases in them. So essentially, the computers learn to have those same biases.
So when that happens, we codify the biases that exist, and especially in cases like artificial intelligence, we then amplify them as well. And this isn't some like foreign future concept. There are a lot of examples of this that we've seen in our lives already.
We actually spoke about two of these examples back in our episode all about unconscious bias. Our first example was where Amazon's resume algorithm discriminated against women applicants because it had been trained primarily off of male CVs or resumes, and basically it taught itself to penalize CVs that had the term women's in it, as in women's chess club captain.
The other example came from the documentary Coded Bias, where Joy Bullen-Weeney discovered that some facial recognition technologies couldn't accurately detect faces that were female or had darker skin because the data sets used to train them when they were first launched consisted predominantly of white masculine faces.
Side note, if you haven't seen the documentary Coded Bias, you should definitely check it out because it is very eye-opening. But those were just two examples of many, so buckle in because we have got some more examples of coded bias for you.
So another example is the story of Correct the Internet. So this is a campaign started in 2023 right here in New Zealand, and it was co-founded by former New Zealand football fern Rebecca Soden. So Soden found that when people search online for factual sporting information about athletes, the results favoured sports men, even when the sports women have greater statistics.
Like, if you ask Google, who has scored the most goals in international football? Google will tell you that the answer is Cristiano Ronaldo. But that's not actually true. It's actually a female footballer called Christine Sinclair. But because the search algorithm assumes that when you're asking about international football, you're asking about men's international football, it gives you the answer to that question. And that right there is coded bias. And that coded bias stops people from getting accurate information.
You can Google that question right now and you'll get that answer. It's shocking. Another example that might be familiar to anyone who's played around with AI image generators is the coded bias in those. So a study done by Thompson and Thomas in 2023 found that AI image generators like Midjourney and DALL-E 2 produced images that were biased when given vague prompts.
So if a user using one of these AI image generators specifies they only want to include people of a certain skin tone or gender in their image, the model will take this into account and it'll produce an image matching what they've asked for. But if this isn't specified, then it'll default to what it thinks you want. And this is where coded bias comes out.
So for their study, Thompson and Thomas explored how Midjourney visualizes seemingly generic terms in the context of specialized media professions, because that was what they were focusing on. And they found for non-specialized job titles, Midjourney returned images of only younger men and women. But for specialized roles, both younger and older people were shown, but the older people were always men.
That is very interesting, and it definitely sounds like a little bit of ageism combined with some sexism is slipping in there. Now, the study also found that there were notable differences in how men and women were presented. So, for example, women were younger and wrinkle-free, whereas men were actually allowed to have those wrinkles and those features of an older person's face.
Yes, the classic, you know, women aren't given permission to age gracefully. We love that.
Even in AI-generated images? Like, come on, give us a break.
I know, right? Give us a break, thank you.
Also, the AI appeared to present gender as a binary, rather than show examples of, you know, different, more fluid gender expressions. And it wasn't just gender. All the images returned for terms like journalist or reporter or correspondent exclusively featured light-skinned people.
And this issue with coded bias in AI-generated images isn't just limited to media professions like the study focused on. Another study done in 2023 focused on the AI image generator Stable Diffusion. And in this study, the generator was asked to produce image sets for a range of jobs, and these image sets had all sorts of bias in them.
So basically, image sets generated for higher paying jobs were dominated by people with lighter skin tones, whereas subjects with darker skin tones were more commonly generated with prompts like fast food worker or social worker.
These images that were produced were reviewed by a team of reporters and then labeled according to the perceived gender of the person pictured. And then they kind of analyzed the gender makeup, and they found that for each image depicting a perceived woman, Stable Diffusion generated almost three times as many images of perceived men. And most occupations in the data set were dominated by men, except for low-paying jobs like housekeeper and cashier. So basically, it was showing that men do more jobs than women, unless it's a woman's low-paying job like housekeeper and cashier.
That makes me so mad, and it just sucks that this bias is being coded into the amazing AI and new technologies that are being created. But back to the study, when considering bias in terms of both skin tone and gender, men with lighter skin tones represented the majority of subjects in every high-paying job, including things like politician, lawyer, judge, and CEO.
That is some serious coded bias going on. And as more people turn to generative AI to produce images for presentations or ads or whatever else they're going to be using it for, if the bias that is coded into these generators isn't addressed, then those biases will only continue to get more and more embedded into our society.
Absolutely. And that is true for all of the different examples of coded bias that we've spoken about today. Whether it's facial recognition software or the results we get from a search engine like Google, bias is codified in the software we produce, and it's super important for everyone to be aware and do what they can to prevent this.
Even just taking the time to call out that, hey, the data set we're using isn't very diverse, or, oh, have we considered that the solution we've designed only really solves the problem for this group of people and totally ignores this other group? Even just doing those things, calling that bias out, can make a big difference.
Hashtag call out that bias. But that is why we wanted to chat about coded bias as our final place in tech that you might not expect to find bias. So moving forward, make sure that you look out for where you could potentially be codifying your biases into technologies, and look out for it on the internet or with tools like generative AI tools, and we should call it out when we see it.
Today, we spoke about three very fun places that you wouldn't expect to find bias in tech, but sadly, we do find it there. We chatted about bias in code review comments and talked through a bunch of research around the sentiment of these comments and how biases can affect how harshly a piece of code is judged.
We also explained the bias that can appear in team dynamics and team processes, talking about things like glue work. And finally, we chatted about the classic coded bias and how bias can literally be written into the technologies that we're developing.
Our next episode is the first in a new series we are doing all about exploring tech jobs. We're going to be talking in great detail about what it's even like being a software developer, that thing that Lola and I do every day, and what the day-to-day of it really looks like.
If you enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you could share it with your friends or on social media to help us spread the word and get Hot Girls Code to more wonderful women.
We'd also love it if you could leave a rating and subscribe to Hot Girls Code wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you need some more Hot Girls Code in your life, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok under @hot_girls_code to keep up to date with the podcast and learn more about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech.
Thanks for listening.